Hi, everybody. This is Gary Sandy, and thank you very much for listening to the WKRP cast.
So just sit right down, relax, open your ears real wide, and say...
Weather today in the greater Cincinnati area.
Are you awake? Whoa! Are you awake now?
But the senator, while insisting he was not intoxicated, could not explain his nudity.
Say what?
Dear God, she's going to kill us all.
Welcome to the WKRP cast. My name is Donna Stair.
And I'm her husband, Alan. This is a week-by-week, episode-by-episode rewatch. We're getting into the music,
the trivia,
and the fun of WKRP.
So, fellow babies, don't touch that dial. It's time for the WKRP cast.
I'm at WKRP in Cincinnati.
Welcome back to another episode of the WKRP cast. The move is done and we are finally set up in a new studio. Hopefully we don't sound too different than before.
We're recording this one on October 30th of 2021, the anniversary of the first airing of Turkeys Away. That's got to be a good omen,
yeah,
right?
I think so, definitely. So let's get to it. This time out, we're hitting the streets. Donna, what is our episode?
We are ready to discuss A Mile in My Shoes. The air date was the 6th of December, 1980, written by Dan Gunselman and Hugh Wilson. Story editor, Lisa Levin. Executive story consultants, Steve Marshall and Dan Gunselman. Directed by Rod Daniel. Herb is selected for jury duty. In his absence, Andy takes over in the sales department. Andy appoints Venus as program director during this time. It doesn't take long for them all to find out that these jobs are not as easy as they thought.
Do you remember a 1980 TV series called Breaking Away? It was, probably not.
No?
It was based on the 1979 bicycling movie of the same name. It's not surprising you don't remember. It only lasted 8 episodes from November of 1980 until January of 81. It rarely broke out of the 50s for the week, and it was direct competition to WKRP at 8 p.m. on Saturday nights. Even with an almost nothing show on ABC and Barbara Mandrell and the Mandrell sisters over on NBC, WKRP was still struggling on Saturday nights.
This episode will finish number 37 for the week. It's the highest they've notched in a month. Saturday nights are the death of cool. After Breaking Away fades away in January, ABC moves to running Charlie's Angels on Saturday nights at 8. The Angels were in their fifth and final season, and their popularity was waning. Even with very little competition, WKRP has trouble attracting an audience. Into spring, the show will usually finish the week somewhere in the low 40s. As Tom Chihok told us, at that time, anything out of the top 20 usually meant death for a series.
The title of this episode is a reference to the phrase, "Before you judge a man, walk a mile in his shoes." Although this is regularly identified as a Native American saying, it actually comes from a Mary T. Lathrop poem published in 1895. The original title of the poem was Judge Softly. It was later retitled Walk a Mile in His Moccasins. There are many variations on this phrase, such as walk a mile in my shoes. It's also the basis for the plea, put yourself in my shoes.
Let's get into the episode. We open up in Carlson's office. Andy is in Mr. Carlson's office explaining to him why the station's revenues were down, even though their billings for the same time period were up. Carlson is looking at his model army men and planes as Travis goes into more detail.
That's the problem. Overdue accounts.
Uh-huh.
Right? These clients have got to pay what they owe, and that's why I want you to talk to Herb.
Now, Andy's wearing a black T-shirt that says University of Rock at Riverfront Coliseum in gold lettering on the front. It also has a listing on the back that looks like tour dates. He's wearing a matching gold and black cap with WKRP across the front, and I think that's very cool looking, that cap. I like it.
We couldn't find anything about this shirt, but we did find the shirt itself on Etsy. It looks like this was a Coliseum promotion. The listing on the back is the honor roll of performers who have instructed at the University of Rock, or something like that. It lists 33 notable Coliseum performances, starting with the Allman Brothers in September of 1975 and running up through Black Sabbath in late October of 1980. This episode shot in November of 1980, so this shirt was hot off the presses.
We do question the admissions process to the University of Rock. Somehow Barry Manilow, the Bee Gees, and Rod Stewart all made this honor roll. Interesting note, the shirt lists The Who's Coliseum performance in December of 1975, but it does not list the concert date for The Who's tragic appearance in December of 1979.
We also saw a new picture over the couch in Carlson's office. It looks like he got an illustration of dog breeds.
Art's pretending his army man is firing his weapon. He's making shooting noises with his mouth as he turns the army man around and around. Andy tells Art he's done sales at little stations and at big stations.
If an overdue client does not pay, you simply replace that client with another one.
And wow, that's easy to say, but a lot harder to do.
Andy bends down for Mr. Carlson's opinion on this discussion, just as Mr. Carlson is bringing his model fighter plane in for a landing on his desk. Exasperated, Andy gets face to face with Carlson.
What did I just say? Geez, don't you know?
Andy is staring at Carlson. He's speechless.
Jennifer comes into the office with a big smile and a cheerful...
Good morning, and how are you two?
Art tells her he's fine.
No bad moods or unresolved anger.
Okay, what's she getting at? Art says no.
I can't hear you, Andy.
Andy assures her he's okay.
Then neither one of you is waiting for an excuse to explode.
They both shake their heads no. Jennifer says that's nice and then turns to the lobby.
It's okay, Herb.
Herb walks in. Jennifer adds before shutting the door.
Never ask me to do this again, Herb.
Yeah, and I'm surprised that he got her to do it this time.
Well, normally we'd be hitting the button for a fashion alert right about now, but not this time. Herb enters looking, dare we say, dapper, in a pale yellow dress shirt, brown, tan, and white striped tie, and a brown suit. It would be great, except for the pockets made of weird light squares of fabric and the matching epaulettes. Herb's looking pretty good, so no fashion alert here.
Herb has some yellow papers in his hands. He puts them in front of Art, asking for his signature.
And hey, is that the Eiffel Tower on Art's desk?
I believe it is.
The actual Eiffel Tower is 1,063 feet tall, the tallest structure in Paris.
Andy pulls up a chair and asks Herb to sit down.
Well, I'm kind of in a rush. Sit down, but I'll make the time.
Andy gets Carlson's attention, and with his head, he motions to Herb.
Listen, Herb, if this sort of thing continues, there's going to be hell to pay.
Art looks to Andy to see if that would suffice. It makes no sense. Herb is confused.
Excuse me?
Andy decides to take it from there.
I think what Mr. Carlson means is we can't let some of our clients go on owing money. That's wrong.
Yeah.
Payment is due when payment is due, Herbert. Period. End of sentence. End of discussion. You got me?
Surely.
Surely.
Herb says he'll get right on it just as soon as they sign these letters. He hands Andy his yellow copies. Flipping through the papers, Carlson tells Herb that the papers look sort of legal.
Mumbo jumbo. I wouldn't waste my time reading it.
That's mumbo jumbo.
Carlson says,
oh, okay.
And he starts to sign. Andy begins reading the letter out loud.
Herbert R. Charles, sales manager, WKRP. Is essential and indispensable to the operation of the company.
Art begins laughing, and he's asking Herb if this is a joke. Herb fesses up.
They pulled my name for jury duty, and I thought maybe you could get me off.
I don't know.
Art tells him no. It's his duty to serve. Herb says he understands, but who's going to look after sales while he's gone? Well, Andy tells him he can do it.
Somebody's got to get on those overdue accounts.
Looking at Art, he asks him,
you want to do it?
No.
Sign.
Herb hands Art a pen. Art's thinking, if I can get rid of this with a signature, sure. He starts to sign on the dotted line.
Under penalty of perjury.
Carlson turns to look at Andy. He asks Andy where it says that. Andy tells him, last paragraph. Carlson slams the pen down and tells Herb to go do his duty. Andy volunteers to handle sales.
And Venus could fill in for me.
Well, Carlson likes this idea.
Just remember who thought of it.
And as Herb heads off to serve, we head into our theme.
WKRP in Cincinnati.
We come back from commercial break to find Johnny in the studio. Now, if you'd have tuned in back in December of 1980, you'd have heard Get Off of My Cloud by the Rolling Stones. It sounded like this.
Johnny, perhaps I've been a touch abrupt in my attempts to persuade you to play our play. I attribute this failure of communication to my brief tenure as acting program director. I would kindly ask you to come.
You haven't listened to me in 4 days, man.
Unfortunately, Shout Factory couldn't get clearance for Get Off of My Cloud, so we wound up with a sound-alike instead. This is kind of what they did with The Long Run and The Doctor's Daughter. Check it out.
Johnny, perhaps I've been a touch of luck.
You haven't listened to me in 4 days, man.
As always, a big thanks to the Big D, Dale Kovar, for allowing us to hear how it really sounded from his amazing set of recreated discs.
Let's talk about the Stones on WKRP. Getting clearance on Stones songs has proven to be a weird dance for Shout Factory. In the first season, Lies, Beast of Burden, and I'm Moving On all got restored by the Shout Factory. In season two, Bitch was restored, but we missed out on hearing Sympathy for the Devil from the In Concert episode.
So far in season three, She's So Cold didn't make it into Real Families, and now we don't get to hear Get Off of My Cloud. Coming up, we'll have another no on Sympathy in the Dr. Fever and Mr. Hyde episode, and in the fourth season, we'll run into Stone's no-goes on Start Me Up and Satisfaction. It seems like the bigger, more commercially viable songs are the ones that didn't get the nod. The album cuts and the minor hits were restored.
Now back to the studio, Johnny is reading a Billboard magazine. We see Venus pass by the window. He comes into the studio, seeming a bit harried and agitated.
But looking good.
Now let's take a look at Venus's vibin' threads.
Wow, Venus is looking sharp. He's wearing a dark brown suit jacket, khaki-colored dress pants, a white dress shirt, and a dark brown and white striped tie and matching pocket handkerchief. He even has a Rolling Stones Lips logo button with the tongue sticking out on his jacket lapel.
We didn't get to hear it, but we can at least talk about Get Off of My Cloud by the Stones. It was a 1965 single recorded as a follow-up to their smash I Can't Get No Satisfaction. Was recorded in September of 65 and released as a single, not as part of an album. It was included eventually on the album December's Children from later that year. It has also made every Stones compilation album because it was a smash hit. Cloud spent 2 weeks at number one in the U.S. and 3 weeks at number one in the U.K.
We have tons of new posters in the control room. So, warning, we have a lot of new posters. If you aren't into the poster watch, hit the fast forward now. If you are into the posters, let's geek out.
To skip the poster watch, fast forward 6 minutes and 30 seconds from Mark.
The Doors' greatest hits is on the door. The Red Wedge poster at the top of the door is a promo for the October 1980 release, The Doors' Greatest Hits, also called just The Doors' Album. The previous year, the film Apocalypse Now featured several Doors songs. A new generation discovered Jim and Company. In order to capitalize, Elektra released this disc. The compilation featured 10 of their biggest songs, recorded between 1965 and 1971. With sales of more than 5 million copies, it is one of the best-selling compilations in history. It is also credited with introducing a new generation to the music of the Doors.
Riders on the Storm.
riders on the storm. Into this house we're born, into this world we're thrown, like a dog without a bone, and packed we're out alone, riders on the storm.
And I was one of those 5 million, and that was my first ever Doors album. Very cool. Huey Lewis and the News has a poster under the window. This is promoting their self-titled debut. The album was recorded in December of 79 with a 1980 release. The only single was called Some of My Lies Are True, Sooner or Later. It didn't chart, and the album peaked at number 203, just missing the Billboard album chart. An interesting note, the band's original name was Huey Lewis and the American Express. Chrysalis Records requested they change the name. Chrysalis was worried about getting sued by the credit card company of the same name.
The outlined guy walking to the left across the door is guitar virtuoso Jeff Beck. This picture was used to promote his 1980 studio album, There and Back. It also appeared on the picture sleeve for the single, The Final Piece. Depending on the cover, they sometimes flip the image so he goes both directions, there and back. Beck has been named as the most influential lead guitarist in rock and roll by Rolling Stone magazine, and he was one of only three guitarists to play with the Yardbirds. The other two were Jimmy Page and Eric Clapton. That's some pretty rare air.
There's a Gilda Radner poster on the bulletin board above the control panel. You'll see it kind of behind Johnny's head. It says Caught in the Act right in front of her. But the name of the album was actually Gilda Radner Live in New York. This poster is promoting a recording of her one-woman Broadway show. Now, the show itself was a hit. It sold a lot of tickets. It touched on racier themes and characters than what she was allowed to do on the FCC-controlled Saturday Night Live. The 1980 movie of the concert, directed by Mike Nichols, and this soundtrack album didn't do so well. Interesting tidbit, although Gilda is quite famously Mrs. Gene Wilder, it was during this show she met her first husband, ponytailed guitarist G.E. Smith, who eventually led the Saturday Night Live band. Gilda and G.E. were married from 1980 until 1982. Gilda married Willy Wonka in 1984.
Behind Andy, to the right of the studio door, is a poster promoting Zenyatta Mandata, the third studio album by The Police. This album has a nonsensical name and includes the nonsensical song Di-Doo-Doo-Doo-Di-Da-Da-Da. Do-Do-Do-Da-Da-Da-Da. The other single from this album is Don't Stand So Close to Me. Both would peak at number 10 on the Hot 100, giving The Police their first top 10 U.S. singles. The album debuted at number 1 in the UK and peaks at number 5 on the US album chart. It will remain on the US chart for 3 years, selling more than 2 million copies.
Now, if you look just under the Doors logo to the right of the door, is a poster based on a very cool picture of electric bass jazz virtuoso Stanley Clark. Stanley released albums in 1978, 79, and 80, but we couldn't find this picture or poster connected to the promotion of any of those albums. Michael Hernandez, the accountant of Rock, was able to find the image this poster is based on, but the poster itself remains a mystery.
Phew.
And whoo, okay, poster watch over.
Johnny sees Venus enter, but he ignores him. Johnny doesn't even acknowledge Venus. As Venus begins talking, Johnny turns the volume of the music up, causing Venus to have to speak louder and louder. Johnny keeps raising the volume.
And wow, we are getting a lot of the sound-alike for Get Off of My Cloud, making me proud. I guess they tried.
Well, Venus is yelling. Venus reaches over and turns the volume all the way down.
You haven't listened to me in 4 days, man.
Well, you haven't made any sense in 4 days.
I'm just doing my job.
Oh, I thought you were trying to do Andy's job.
Now we know the problem. Johnny continues.
You used to be a good disc jockey, man. Of course, that's when you were black.
You want to be acting program director? You want to argue about something you don't care about with somebody you agree with?
Ooh. Johnny gives Venus a strange look.
Do you understand what you just said?
Not a word.
Andy comes into the studio and begins putting albums on the shelves. Venus and Johnny stand up.
When is Herb coming back?
I love the unison stuff. Andy says he doesn't know and he asks them why.
This guy is out of line.
Andy tells him if they continue to speak in unison, he's leaving. Johnny asks Travis if he really has to play what Venus says to play. Andy tells Johnny Venus is the acting PD. So basically, yeah.
I can't see an all Barry White weekend, you know?
Right on.
Venus rolls his eyes.
Johnny mentions Barry White. Barry White was born Barry Eugene Carter in Galveston, Texas, in September of 1944. Starting in the early 60s, at age 16, White became a radio mainstay. He was the soul behind the Love Unlimited Orchestra until he launched a successful 70s solo career. Big Barry would have 41 platinum albums over the course of his career. 41.
Yeah, that's huge.
My darling, I can't get enough of your love, babe. Girl, I don't know why. Can't get enough of your love, babe.
His popularity was fading at about the time of this episode, but he had a loyal following. Barry died in 2003 at the age of 58. In the UK, his size and hair earned Barry the nickname The Walrus of Love.
Yeah, baby. The Walrus of Love. Andy points at them both as he tells them,
if I can handle sales, you can handle programming, and you can adjust.
He tells Johnny to drop the Chicken City commercials from the lineup.
Not the Chicken City spots.
Oh, man, we're losing Chicken City. They're refusing to pay, so Chicken City is out. Venus asks Andy if he lost a client. Andy tells them he'll replace him.
If they pay, they're clients. If they don't, they are charity.
Thanks, Herb.
Venus is chuckling at this. Andy walks up between them.
Neither one of you guys have got a clue
just how rough it is out there on the street selling this place.
Andy looks at them.
At unison. I warned you.
He did warn them. It was unison. Andy's out of there.
What's with him?
Those two are like a comedy team. Venus and Johnny together, they are always great.
Yeah, just amazing.
We transition to the bullpen. Jennifer is sitting on Bailey's desk, telling her about a recent date.
So there we are standing at my front door, and he says, Jennifer, some women would feel obligated after flying to New Orleans on a private jet and a moonlight dinner on a Mississippi riverboat. But I prefer a challenge.
We see a shot of Les. He's sitting at his desk, and he is totally into Jennifer's story. He's leaning forward, anxiously awaiting Jennifer's next words.
Someone who's interested in me and not my money.
What'd you do?
Well, I wished him luck, kissed him on his bald spot, and wheeled him to his car.
Bailey laughs and looks over at Les.
Andy walks into the bullpen. Jennifer tells Andy that a Jim Gashin from the Tube and Lube Shops called and left a message. She reads the message out loud.
Regarding your hardball collection agency tactics, I won't pay you one red cent. Put your commercials where the sun don't. I can't make that out.
Jennifer says she can't make out that last part. I think she knows what it says. Andy thanks her.
Andy, pruning a tree of its dead branches helps new branches to grow.
Right.
Andy looks at Bailey and nods his head. He kind of doesn't get it there, I don't think.
Andy goes to Herb's desk, hits the receiver with his hand, causing it to pop up. He grabs it and dials.
It's the Herb move, that pound in the receiver thing. Andy is truly becoming Herb.
That's scary.
Yeah.
He looks back at Bailey and tells her that's his way of thinking exactly.
That's where he finally got it, I think, right
yeah,
there.
Yeah, the comment about the dead branches.
Pruning the trees, and, yeah.
Someone has answered the phone at the other end.
Yeah, hello, honey. May I speak with Barney Marshall, please? Oh, Mr. Marshall. Hi, sorry. Bad connection here, I guess.
And we talked about this. This is like a missed joke. He says, hiya, honey, and then realizes he's talking to Barney. But nobody laughed. Nobody reacted to it.
I think it went over their heads or they
just
weren't paying attention.
Yeah, it went right by people. I don't know.
He goes on to introduce himself. He tells him he is from WKRP.
And I would like to show you how inexpensive and, I believe, effective at WKRP. Radio. Yeah, we're here in town. Andy Travis. Right. Mr. Marshall, may I call you Barney? Okay, that's not important. I'm a very busy man, too. Okay, fine. I'll hold.
Andy lets the phone receiver drop to his shoulder as he rubs between his eyes.
Les looks up from reading a current copy of the Mahaska Pork News, and he calls Andy's name.
Andy.
Les, once again, keeping up with the hog reports in Mahaska County, Iowa. He must have a subscription.
And you know, since he started reading that paper, it looks a lot better. I think the pressure is on them to make it look nice since they're now on national television with it. So Andy's just sitting there on hold, staring into space, thinking it's because Andy didn't hear him. Les gets up and opens his office door. Well, of course that was it. He couldn't hear him through the door. And he says his name again.
Andy.
Bailey shakes her head at Les, trying to get him to understand it's not a good time.
Not now, Les.
Les tries again, saying Andy's name loudly.
Andy.
Andy turns around looking at Les.
Yes.
And now a special look at this episode's bandage placement for the 5-time Buckeye Newshawk Award winner, Les Nessman. This is the Les Nessman Bandage Report. Now, here's Donna Stair with her report about Les Nessman.
Entire left pinky finger.
This has been a look at the bandage placement for Silver Sow and Copper Cob award-winning journalist Les Nessman.
Have you ever heard about the reporter who dyed his skin dark and went to live with black people?
Andy tells Les he's on the phone. Bailey tells Les that she's heard of that reporter.
It's called Black Like Me. It's a great book.
And you know what? It's never been done on radio.
Oh, bless.
I want to go out among the black people, along the highways and byways, in the cafes, laughing, loving, crying, and singing, living the life of the Negro, and reporting it all in a series of award-winning news specials. What do you say?
Andy is staring at Les. Andy's mouth is stuck in the open position. He snaps out of it and tells Les he thinks it sounds great.
I'd say go ahead and do it. But see, I'm in sales while Herb's gone. You're going to have to talk to Venus about this.
Well, Les is thrilled, and he leaves the bullpen saying he needs to run some tests.
Yeah, it's great as long as Andy doesn't have to deal with it. Les is referencing what was originally a groundbreaking series of articles in Sepia magazine by Mansfield, Texas journalist John Howard Griffin. The articles would become a book, then a movie. Les is a bit late to the party. Griffin made his incredible journey through the South as a black man in 1960. Instead of just dyeing his skin, Griffin took the anti-vitiligo drug methoxylin. A side effect is darkening the skin. He also spent up to 15 hours a day under an ultraviolet lamp. He then touched up his skin with stain and he sheared his brown hair short to complete the effect. Even friends did not recognize him.
Griffin traveled throughout areas around New Orleans, ultimately ending his 6-week journey in Montgomery, Alabama. He stopped taking the methoxylin and spent 3 days in a darkened hotel room, regaining his original skin color. Griffin said he was shocked by how warmly he was received in Montgomery once he had again become a white man. He had become accustomed to the hate stare given to him by whites whenever he would get on a bus or walk into a diner. Griffin's journal, written during the journey, would form the basis for the series of articles and the best-selling 1961 book of the same name.
And he puts the receiver back to his ear.
I yell, Mr. Marshall. Yes, I'm still here. I'm still waiting. Hello.
Hello.
Art comes into the bullpen and tells Andy he just got off the phone with Al Carpenter from the OK Corral RVs.
Says you've been harassing him.
Andy tells Art he's been harassing Smiling Al because he owes the station over $9,000. Art tells Andy to save the rough tactics for some of the real deadbeats.
Carlson goes on to explain Al's happy to pay.
Oh, sure he is.
Well, he's even got a new campaign that he wants to go over with Andy when he picks up his check.
That's great.
Carlson tells Andy to be nice to the man and get on over there. Andy rushes out of the bullpen. Carlson calls after him.
If you need anybody to go, you know, bare knuckles with any of these deadbeats, you know where to find me.
I have dealt with slow pay and no pay clients, both as a radio sales exec and more often with the ad agency. It's more common than you'd think, and it is no fun because the client is usually a friend. As an account exec, you get to know about their business, but you also hear about the family, the kids, and it's hard to be tough on a guy who's 90 days out when you know his 10-year-old daughter just got braces. You also don't want to cut them off completely from the advertising, because if they stop advertising, their business is going to slow down, and that makes it even harder for them to pay.
We transition to the jury deliberation room. A door opens, and people begin filing into this deliberation room. We can hear Herb's voice before we see him.
Now, ladies and gentlemen, we've wasted enough time on this trial already.
They all take their seats. An elderly man brings up the end of the line, and he comes shuffling in.
Dad, could you slip it into gear? I've got what's left of a career to get back to.
Which brings us to
the line of the episode.
Why is this man in the ugly suit telling us what to do?
And speaking of ugly suit,
it's time.
Herb Darlick, fashion alert.
We have seen this suit before, but like so many of his others, this ensemble is worth mentioning again. Green plaid with lines of blue running horizontally all over, a white dress shirt with thin blue vertical stripes, and a tie with geometric shapes of brown, green, and white on a dark background, and Kelly green pants with his signature white belt and white shoes.
Walter is being played by Walter Janowitz. Walter Janowitz was born in 1913 in Austria-Hungary. He debuted in an episode of the 1962 TV series called The Gallant Men. Walter was busy throughout the 60s working on multiple projects each year of the decade. He was on 13 episodes of Hogan's Heroes playing Oscar Schnitzer. He appeared on 5 different episodes of Barney Miller, where he played 4 different characters. Walter was active until 1982, racking up 36 performer credits. Those included multiple episodes and a few big screen appearances. Walter died in 1997 at his home in Corona, California.
Herb tells Walter if he didn't want him to be jury foreman, he shouldn't have voted for him.
I didn't.
Herb announces he wants to finish up by lunch. A young woman from the jury stands up.
Is this where you want me, Mr. Tartar?
Herb, Mr. Tartar.
Herb tells her she's fine. A young man from the jury leans over to the woman sitting by this young woman who just spoke.
Do you think we could change seats? It's really very important to me.
The older woman shakes her head no. She's not moving.
Yeah, and he's got designs on Miss Tartar.
She's credited on IMDb as young female juror, but we like to think of her as Miss Tartar. Her name is Jessica Nelson. She just started her acting career earlier in 1980 on an episode of The White Shadow, also an MTM production, and it was also shot there on the Radford studio lot. Jessica was primarily active from 1980 to 1988. She has a total of 21 acting credits, and she did land a 5-episode recurring character on Archie Bunker's Place in 1983.
And, of course, the guy hoping to hit on Miss Tartar is credited as young male juror. His name is Joseph Rial. Joseph's career has been on again, off again, with 19 credits over about a 40-year period. He was first credited as a prince on a 3-part Mission Impossible in 1970. He seems to be more dramatic than comic, with guest shots on Hours like Mannix, Starsky & Hutch, and Beretta. His last credit is as Man in Barber Chair from a short called Redemption Song in 2007. Those other folks on the jury? They didn't speak, so no credit. Herb addresses the group. He says they've all seen the evidence, they've heard the testimony, and he thinks the verdict is quite obvious.
I hate to admit it, but the smart aleck is right.
All right. Now, if you raise your hand, we fry him. If you don't, we let the guy off. Okay, vote.
Herb raises his hand. He's the only one wanting to fry the guy.
The flag in the corner of the deliberation room seems to be the Ohio Burgee. We've seen the miniature version on both Mr. Carlson's and Herb's desks.
Now, hold on a minute. We counted the room, and they've only got 8 people on this jury. We've all seen 12 angry men. It's 12, right? Well, it turns out, not so much. Herb is on what's called a Pettit jury. Pettit juries are the ones that deliver a guilty or not guilty verdict. Depending on local laws and factors like the population of a county, Pettit juries can legally be anywhere from 6 up to 12 people. Usually, they're an even number, and regardless of the number on the jury, a capital case requires a unanimous verdict one way or the other.
Well, we also noticed ashtrays on the table in the deliberation room. Man, have things changed in 40 years. Can you imagine smoking in a municipal public building?
Now we're in Smilin' Al's office, where Smilin' is on the phone with his receptionist.
That greenhorn from that radio station still waiting for me? Well, send that peck of wood in here, and Holly, be sure and buzz me back on the horn, honey, in a couple of minutes.
I believe he's talking about Andy, who walks in and Al runs right over to greet him. Oh, he is just all smiles. He grabs Andy's hand, shakes it vigorously. Andy introduces himself, saying, they talked on the phone earlier.
What a character Al is. He is wearing a blue polyester suit, complete with a vest, yellow shirt with a bolo tie, and boots. This guy reminds me of Foghorn Leghorn. Remember him?
Rooster? We don't need no more roosters around here. We got one, and I'm it. Oh, straighten this out in one cotton-picking minute. Look at here!
Now, Smilin' Al is being played by Noble Willingham. Noble was born in Mineola, Texas, in August of 1931. He graduated college in 1953 and worked as a high school econ teacher for 9 years before pursuing his true dream of acting. He auditioned for and got a part in 1971's The Last Picture Show, which filmed in Texas. It won the Academy Award for Best Picture.
The exposure launched Noble to the Academy Award-winning Paper Moon. He would go on to appear in more than 30 feature films. On TV, he was a regular on Home Improvement and had a recurring role on Walker, Texas Ranger. He racked up more than 130 acting credits beginning in 1970 and continuing through his death in 2004. One of his final appearances was released after his death.
Andy is wearing his cowboy hat and Smilin' Al comments about it.
You didn't tell me he was a cowboy.
Andy tells him he's not a real cowboy. Al asks where Andy's from, and we find out new information about Andy. He's from Phoenix, Arizona.
Are you from there?
No, I visited there one time. Drop your saddle side here and let's see whose brand's on them cattle.
What?
Hooch.
I'm sorry?
Hooch, a little conversation, lubrication.
And what was all of that? Andy thanks him, but says no to the hooch while they're talking.
Al ignores Andy's polite refusal and holds a bottle out to him.
Right out of the bottle. Oh, that's fine.
Well, Andy takes a swig as Al opens a folder from his desk. Andy is trying to keep from spitting out this whiskey that he just took in. From the expression on his face, you know it had to burn going down. He's covering his mouth and silently choking. Al tells him he has some commercials that have to start today. He tells Andy he has a lot of business.
Andy tells him that sounds wonderful.
And I'm going to hear all about it just as soon as we settle up that account there, Al.
Call me Smile.
Smile.
What?
Smile. Call me Smile. Al's phone buzzes, and he tells Andy to take another drink. He picks up the phone.
I let that gummit, I told you not to disturb me. Well, I told him I was going to do business WKRP. No, I'm not going to go with this station. That much less. Well, tell him I'll see him at 2 o'clock, honey.
This is that call he told his secretary to make in to him. So after witnessing that phone call, Andy changes his approach.
I can see there's no reason to beat around the bush with a fella like you. WKRP wants you as a client.
And after he gets Andy lubed up with the liquor, he tells Andy no on the drink and explains he has some commercials he wants to run during drive time today for a little sale he's having.
Al also tells Andy that he knows the rate is a steep $40 a spot. Andy asks him, how does $30 sound?
$20 sound better.
Oh, that's half rate.
Well, I guess you could look at it that way, but damn. My head ain't screwed on right, boy. I plumb forgot to give you the check for the $9,000 we owe you.
He hands Andy the check. Andy looks at it and he laughs.
Wow! What? I believe we can give you those commercials at $20 a spot if you order 100.
Al tells him he only needs 50, but Andy's not done.
It's a gesture of good faith. I am willing to commit to that in writing. Right now.
Boy, Andy's the tough sell, isn't he?
Andy grabs a pen and he writes down $20 a spot and he signs it. He turns the pen over to Al.
Now, you remember just a season and a half ago, Ferryman was buying commercials for $20 a spot and they were happy to get it. They've raised the rates quite a bit. Al is laughing as he signs.
Boy, I like your style. You have got guts.
You know what? Doggone it, this is fun. Look at that.
Al gets up to get the commercials to send with Andy so they can start today. Andy's looking more closely at that check Al gave him, and he's trying hard to focus in on it.
Say smile.
What?
This check's wrong.
What?
Yeah. See, it's $9,000 in numbers, but it's written out and says 900.
Al walks over and looks at the check. He's shocked as Andy holds it out, pointing to it.
Why, hell, there's no bank in the world would take that check.
Al is just as surprised as can be.
Right. We had to look this one up. When the words and the numbers don't match on a check, the words are always supposed to take precedence over the numbers. In reality, Andy might have gotten away with it. Most banks only check the numbers.
Andy tells him it's a good thing he caught that. Oh, yeah. Al tells him he'll cut WKRP another check, and they'll get it in the mail later today.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
We'll run them commercials just as soon as that check arrives.
With a big smile on his face, Al happily responds.
Oh, no, we'll run them commercials today. We've got a contract.
Andy sinks back into the chair.
At $20. Spot.
100 of them, son, and I never would have done it. Except you got me over one deep barrel.
Andy pushes his hat back on his head. He knows he's been played. That's a fun story, but a reality check on that. If you've got overdue invoices at a radio station, you can't run a new contract. It's in all of those agreements. Some account execs will try to look the other way to keep a good client, but Andy really would win this one when it comes to keeping Smile off the air. Hey, this is Al calling from the future. Now, as we were watching the Smile and Al scene, the energy seemed wrong. I couldn't put my finger on it until I was transferring the audio to the editor and only listening to the soundtrack. It's a funny scene, but there aren't that many laughs. After comparing the Shout Factory disc to Dale Kovar's version, it's pretty obvious this is another sweetening issue like we heard in Herb's Dad. It was common practice for multicam sitcoms to use the takes from the no-audience shoot, but then add in the reactions from the audience recorded at the other taping. Using a dry or a clean scene without crowd reactions made it easier to balance the laughs with the actors' voices. Here's a quick comparison. The Shout Factory version...
Cut and Claude cut you another check. We'll get it in the mail to you today.
I see. We'll run them commercials just as soon as that check arrives.
Oh, no, no, we'll run them commercials today. We've got a contract.
Right. At $20. Spot.
$100 of them, son, and I never would have done it. Except you got me over 1D barrel.
And the as-aired scene from the Kovar discs.
Well, Claude cut you another check. We'll get it in the mail to you today.
Let's see. We'll run them commercials just as soon as that check arrives.
Oh, no, no, we'll run them commercials today. We've got a contract.
At $20. Spot.
$100 of them, son, and I never would have done it. Except you got me over 1D barrel.
This would also explain the non-response to Andy's phone call to Barney Marshall. Okay, just wanted to mention it. Now, back to the past.
And we come back to the studio. Johnny is in the studio once again, and Another One Bites the Dust by Queen is playing over the air. Johnny's ready when the song ends abruptly.
Another One Bites the Dust!
And not a moment too soon either, babies. That was Queen with their big hit, one that I never particularly cared for, but I'm nevertheless forced to play here on WKRP. This is Dr. Johnny Fever just doing my job, following the orders of Venus Flytrap. He's just doing Andy Travis' job, while Andy fills in for our sales manager, Herb Tarlick, who's not doing his job.
Another One Bites the Dust is from Queen's eighth studio album, The Game. This is Queen's biggest single, selling more than 7 million copies. It was written by bassist John Deacon and sung by Freddie Mercury. The single would spend 3 weeks at number one on the U.S. Hot 100. It would also spend more total weeks on the chart than any other song of the year.
Another One Bites the Dust was targeted by Christian leaders in the early 80s as a song that contains backward masked messages. Ever since the Beatles did backward masking, everybody was always looking for this stuff. Now, Queen's record company has denied there are any messages, but I've always believed this one. I think it very clearly says, decide to smoke marijuana. Check it out. This is the section going forwards.
Another one busts the dust. Another one busts the dust. Ow! Another one busts the dust. Hey, hey! Another one busts the dust. Hey!
Now, we'll take that same section, and this is what it sounds like played in reverse. I can hear it. Do you hear it?
I heard it. Yeah.
I heard it. And I used to do this in the radio station back when it first came out and we heard about this. I would record it to a reel, flip it around, and play it backwards. And it's always sounded that way to me.
We come back to the jury deliberation room and whoa, right off the bat,
it's time.
Herb Darlick, fashion alert.
Another day, another suit. This is a repeat, but it's always going to get an alert. Plaid brown, white, with lines of green-gray jacket and matching pants, and wow, that's a lot.
Lot of plaid.
With a flesh-colored dress shirt, brick-red tie, white belt, and white shoes.
Herb is talking to the group about the scene of the crime.
The broken glass, the empty rolls of masking tape, the torn silk sheets.
My apartment's a mess, too. I don't see what that proves.
This young woman is painting her nails during this discussion. The young man at the end of the table leans forward.
I'd like to see your apartment.
He's getting frustrated.
He's really trying
hard,
though.
He's working hard here, yeah. So he's smiling at her. The young man says he's a Scorpio, and he asks for her sign. She doesn't know what her astrological sign is, and I don't think she even knows what signs are.
You know, even though I wasn't really into all that stuff, I at least knew my sign.
Yeah, at least knew the sign. Yeah, even if you don't know what house you're in.
Well, Walter speaks up about some evidence that he wants to discuss.
If we are going to talk evidence, let's not forget the fireplace poker.
Herb and the young girl look at Walter.
Just a little joke. The old immigrant man made a little joke.
Herb is not amused. He tells Walter, crime is no joke.
Talk to your tailor.
Walter's best hits are at Herb's clothes. Those are Walter's best jokes. So the young woman asked the group if any of them saw the guy's eyes.
They were so sad. It looked like he was about to cry.
Herb gives a laugh. He tells her it was acting. He tells them he's been around. He hustles for a living. He's a salesman and proud of it. Leaning down, he looks in the young woman's eyes.
Sales is my life. But while we're here doing our civic duty, some jerk is back there trying to rob me of my livelihood. Oh, sure, he's a hot dog. But what if he gets lucky and has a good week? I'm out. Career over. And all those years of record-breaking sales forgotten.
Herb puts his head down on the back of his hand as he grips a pencil. The young woman strokes his hair and then suddenly remembers that her nails might be wet from the polish. She pulls her hand away, blows on her nails. Seeing that her nails are all right, she asks Herb if he's okay.
Of course, honey, that's acting. Let's vote guilty.
Herb raises his hand. Three other hands go up.
And when she stuck her hands into Herb's hair, that's a lot of hair Frank Bonner's got going there. So we come back to the lobby where Jennifer is at her desk reading a book. Art comes out of his office. He leans down on her desk and in a very authoritative tone gives some instructions.
Jennifer, for the next hour, I will be taking all calls and seeing all visitors.
He tells her she's probably a bit surprised hearing that coming from him.
Nearly as surprised as I feel hearing myself say it.
Jennifer tells him nothing he does surprises her.
Carlson becomes very serious.
Been reevaluating, Jennifer. I've been thinking.
And you should. You're the boss. And for that reason, I will let no calls and no visitors disturb you.
Mr. Carlson thanks Jennifer and goes back into his office. And who just came into the lobby?
Yeah, who is that guy?
It's Andy. He is in a three-piece suit carrying a briefcase. His hair is slicked back. What is going on?
Andy greets Jennifer.
Good morning, gorgeous.
Can it, Herb?
It's just like a reflex. Andy straightens his tie.
What?
Jennifer looks up, kind of surprised.
Andy, I'm sorry. I thought you were Herb. You see, he calls me gorgeous, you don't.
And that's always been an oversight on my part. Hey, you look great.
Jennifer thanks him. Andy asks if he has any messages.
No.
Any mail?
Sorry.
Andy tells her he's made over 24 sales calls this week.
Not one message, not one reply?
Jennifer offers to give his mail address to occupant.
Well, Andy has had it. He tells Jennifer he just doesn't understand.
I've lived and breathed radio since I was a little boy.
He says he's done every job there is to be done at a radio station, including sales, and at some of the number one operations in the country.
It's never happened like this before.
Venus comes into the lobby, and he's agitated. He sees Andy and lays into him.
Travis, what are you doing to me, man?
What?
You're out to having a great time in sales. Why are you adding to my headaches in programming?
Having a great time in sales. Andy doesn't know what Venus is talking about, but from the hallway leading to the bullpen, we hear a voice.
Venus!
That's the voice that would keep you awake at
yes.
night.
Yes. Venus quickly heads out the main doors. He just leaves the station, calling over his shoulder.
Thanks for sending Les to me with that award-winning idea of his.
Les enters from the bullpen hallway. He's holding up his right arm. It is brown from his fingertips to his elbow. He asks Jennifer if she has seen Venus, and she shakes her head no. Les proudly displays his arm for Andy.
So far, so good, Andy. What do you think?
Andy is hiding a smile.
Shoe polish, you
I
think?
I don't know.
Or just mud. Art comes out of his office. He tells Jennifer he's going down to the club for his steam, and he'll be back in an hour or two. It's good to be king.
Hello, Travis. Hello, Les. Good-looking suit, Andy. Go wash up, Les.
I love how he didn't even look over at them, but he knew what was going on, and Art is out the door.
Now, a white performer coloring their skin to look black was an unfortunate tradition in early American theater, referred to as blackface. This kind of performance can be traced to New York in 1769. Blackface in the U.S. gained widespread popularity in about 1830. It would be a regular part of American theater and minstrel shows until the 1930s. Al Jolson would be the first white performer to appear on film in blackface in 1927's The Jazz Singer.
Although blackface had, for the most part, died out by the 1980s, it would still show up in movies and on TV. In 1983's Trading Places, Dan Aykroyd dons blackface to play a Jamaican character. In 1986, C. Thomas Howell spends almost the entire movie in blackface in Soul Man. Thankfully, blackface has almost entirely disappeared from pop culture. For the last 30 years or so, blackface in movies and on TV was intended to be ironic instead of insulting. Even so, after the 2020 killing of George Floyd, episodes of 30 Rock, The U.S. Office, Golden Girls, Community, and Scrubs, which included characters appearing in blackface, were all pulled from circulation.
We transition to the jury deliberation room. Herb tells everyone that since they can't seem to come to an agreement, he'll make the decision.
That's not fair.
Fair's got nothing to do with it. I'm hungry. Now, that's three large pizzas, two with everything, one plain, and one spinach salad.
Not the decision.
I like the way they kind of made you think that. The young woman is filing Walter's nails. She asks if they could order Chinese again. Walter is talking about how spinach salads are good for you, but not to listen to him.
Yeah, I'm just an old little man from another country.
Not from where I sit, Pops.
There's a name for that grin Walter has on his face, but we've got to stay clean here. So Herb asks where they'd left off.
Walter had just offered to teach me how to swim in his jacuzzi.
Walter is smiling that huge smile of his and nodding his head.
He's an Aquarian. With his moon rising.
So you think Walter's taught her something about signs, huh?
I think so, yeah. Because now I think he's been like giving her little tutorials
his
nails.
Yeah, he's working on her, all right. So Herb is becoming impatient.
I don't care. Where were we?
You were just summing up your 15th and final stupid point.
Herb continues, but is interrupted by Walter.
Lastly, ladies and gentlemen of the jury.
It should be salad. Raffage is very important.
Lastly, the defendant is Italian.
The young man is not too happy, and he tells Herb he is Italian.
That explains your vote, doesn't it?
The young man stands up and begins walking toward Herb. Walter stands up and tells them they're both dummies.
The defendant is a Canadian.
Oh.
Walter tells everyone he wants to get this finished today.
I don't want to look at another suit of his.
Walter points at Herb as he says this.
Again, Walter's best lines are about Herb's clothing.
Okay, so what was the whole thing about the defendant is Canadian? Oh,
I don't really know. I mean, they're playing this, but you could be Italian and from Canada.
Yeah, but what is the big deal about being Canadian? And that's like, explains. I don't get it.
We'll have to talk to Roy Penny, see what Roy has to say. So Herb tells Walter he's the foreman.
Down, Junior!
Walter asks everyone to raise their hands if they want him snuffed. Now they all raise their hands except Herb. Walter looks at Herb incredulously.
You are the one who convinced me.
Well, I changed my mind, and I'd like spinach salad, too.
Boy, I sure wouldn't want this jury deciding my fate.
I'd be very worried about this group.
Back at the bullpen, Andy is sitting at Herb's desk, and he's working very hard. He's building a log cabin with pencils. He has it at 6 levels high. Bailey is sitting at her desk.
Time to put our tools away, straighten our desks.
climb into our cars and drive off to some senseless, possibly illegal diversion.
Andy tells her she's been hanging around Johnny too much.
I know. Good night, Andy.
So I guess Johnny and Bailey are an item?
I don't know. Or they're just going out drinking together and Bailey's... I don't know what's going on there.
Andy is putting the finishing touches on his log cabin very carefully when Herb comes in.
Working late, Andy?
Andy reacts the same way Herb always does. He jumps up and he quickly tries pushing all the pencils into a drawer. Andy tells Herb it's good to see him. Herb tells Andy the jury wrapped it all up about half an hour ago, and they both speak at the same time.
What was the verdict?
Herb answers Andy's question. Then Herb tells Andy that they couldn't agree on much of anything.
Except the verdict.
Yeah, of course.
And I didn't really follow that. We didn't get the verdict. He didn't say it there. We don't know what happened.
We never find out. Herb chuckles and tells Andy when he saw him at his desk, he didn't recognize him.
Thought you'd hired a replacement for me, but then I saw the hair.
Andy explains he was only filling in. Herb happily takes a seat in his chair and cleans his desk off. He checks to make sure his name is still on the nameplate as he asks,
any problems?
Andy tells Herb he had to cut off a client or two because they wouldn't pay.
Actually, Andy tells Herb he cut off six. Herb is shocked.
Six?
Payment is due when payment is due. That is business.
Yeah, but when it's your commission, man. Herb tells Andy that you gotta know when to hit him. Andy tells him about Smiling Al and how he was this close to collecting that $9,000.
Cousin Claw's getting ready to send
bad check, right?
Andy tells him, yeah.
And he got a whole bunch of new spots at a ridiculously low price.
Andy nods his head.
Oh, Andy. He did that to me 20 times. Then I got smart.
And I'm wondering, how many times did Herb have to touch a hot stove as a kid before he figured that one out?
Maybe 20 times.
Yeah, 20 times.
Herb picks up the phone and he dials. A receptionist answers the phone and Herb asks to speak to the head honcho.
Smile! Listen, buddy, that new campaign of yours, no can do. I went to the mat on this one, but you know the big guy, he's a hard man. Well, he said, Herb, listen, all past dues must be cleared. $5,000 is a start. Uh-uh. Today, I want to see that cousin of yours with a check. Okay, fine.
Andy shakes his hand.
Herbert, that was an incredible display of deceit.
It's part of the job.
Andy offers to buy Herb a drink.
Hooch.
And they head out. Herb tells Andy he wants to ask him something.
Have you ever been in charge of a whole group of people who didn't listen to you or cared what you said?
Yeah, Herb, I have.
Andy and Herb head out of the bullpen.
Oh, and we hear a voice from the studio hallway.
Venus! Oh, Venus!
Oh, man, the door opens and African-American Les walks in. He's wearing Les's clothes, but he has an afro, and his face, neck, and hands are black. Black Les is checking himself out in Herb's extension mirror when Venus opens the door to the bullpen. Les turns and smiles at him, which makes it even creepier.
Yes.
Venus gets this frightened look on his face and quickly slams the door.
Now, before we go, we've got a quick poster watch in the hallway outside the studio. The repeated red and green pattern on the wall across from the bullpen door is a poster for The Clash's London Calling album. London Calling was the third studio album for The Clash and a huge success for the band. The two-disc set went platinum in the U.S. and sold more than 5 million copies worldwide. It's been called one of the greatest albums ever made. In both 2003 and 2012, Rolling Stone magazine listed London Calling at number 8 on their list of the 500 greatest rock albums of all time. It dropped to number 16 in the 2020 listing.
And that's gonna do it for A Mile in My Shoes. That one was a lot of fun. What is up for next week, Donna?
Well, get out your red and green and your jingle bells. We're going to be talking about Bah Humbug. Mr. Carlson eats one of Johnny's special brownies and falls asleep at the station. He has a Christmas Carol dream about being a Scrooge for not giving the radio staff a Christmas bonus.
That's all for this episode of the WKRP Cast. If you'd like to watch along with us, make sure to check our show notes and find us on social media. Follow our Facebook page at WKRP Cast. For more WKRP fun, become a patron. Go to patreon.com/WKRPcast for behind-the-scenes fun, full interviews, and more.
Got a question, comment, or creation? Yeah. Got a question, comment, or correction? Let us know about it. Write us, WKRPcast@gmail.com.
And remember to please rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. Thanks for listening.
Bye, y'all.
There's a new Arkansas closing.
That's an Arkansas closing. All right. Bye, y'all.
Bye, y'all.
May the good news be yours.
The WKRP Cast is not endorsed by MTM Enterprises, Shout Factory, or CBS. This podcast is intended for entertainment and informational purposes only. WKRP in Cincinnati, the WKRP logo, and all names, pictures, and audio of WKRP in Cincinnati characters are registered trademarks of MTM, CBS, Shout Factory, or their respective copyright holders.
Almost forgot, fellow babies. Booger!